chapter. And we completed the first section, or the first two sections we completed. Now, Arjuna too asked a very intelligent question, that these four causes, which verse of the Bhagavad Gita is it related to? So, I explained it deliberately. What is the cause of this explanation? Yeah, so it is Hetu Namena Kaunteya. Hetu is the cause. And the word is there. So how Krishna is the Hetu of this world? Under its order, everything goes on. So I was explaining that. Chakravarti Pada talks about these two causes. He talks about two causes, efficient and ingredient cause. Then we went forward and discussed the other two causes also. So now, basically, if you see, we just go to that verse once again. Now, when we say Krishna is the Upadan, what does it mean? Is Krishna the ingredient of this world? No, he is not. It's matter which is the ingredient of this world. But matter is energy. So, if you see many times, especially in the prayers of Gajendra, you are the universe itself. What is that? Atha Vishvesha Vishvatman Vishvamurte Sokeshume. So, you are not only Vishvesha, you are Vishvatman also. And you are Vishvamurte also. So, how is this possible? Actually, we won't go into analysis of that. But there are verses which seem to say you are the universe only. So, how are you the universe? Because you are the ingredient of the universe. Matter is the ingredient of the universe. This sort of thing will come a lot of times in the 11th chapter when Krishna will be glorified by Arjuna as you are fire, you are sun, you are air, vayur yama agnir varunah shashankaha. And then formal cause means there are so many forms in this material. Well, where do they come from? This is something which impersonalists cannot answer. That even if we say that the forms of this world are illusory, where does that illusion come from? And efficient cause means Krishna is not the doer, but Krishna is the initiator. Just like now our temple, there's a construction crew is working on it. But who is the actual person behind everything? It's the spiritual master, Radhanath Maharaj, Gopal Krishna Maharaj. They want it to happen. And it's their desire that is making it happen. So like that, the efficient cause is Krishna, but the executor is somebody else. The executor is the constructor, the construction crew which is there. And final cause, what is the ultimate purpose of this world? It is to be used to glorify Krishna, to be returned back into Krishna. That is determined by Krishna only. So now, let's continue. Now Krishna talks about those who do not understand this nature, this relationship of his with this world. So now again, matsthani, I am situated or I am not situated in this world. That is the puzzle. And Krishna understood that, okay, this world is situated in me, but I am not, Krishna explained that, this world is situated in me, but I am not situated in this world. And then further he says, actually, this world is not even situated in me also. So basically the idea is that this world does not burden Krishna. Krishna does everything effortlessly. And then, after that, Krishna talks about those who misunderstand his position, especially his relationship with matter and the material world. Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto bhuta maheshwaram.
Who would derive me when I descend into the human form? They do not know my transcendental nature as supreme god of all deities.
So, param bhavam. Chakravarti Pada explains, param bhavam, what is the supreme nature of mine? My supreme nature is that my soul and my body are non-different. That is the meaning of param bhavam. Manushim tanu maashritam. So Krishna has used the word tanu second time in this Bhagavad Gita. What are the first time? You remember where tanu was used? Yo yo yam yam tanum bhaktya shraddhayar chitam ichyati. That was in the 7th chapter, verse 21. So, okay, you can worship whichever body, whichever form, whichever shape you want. But according to your nature, but ultimately, it is I who give the fruits. Now, Krishna is saying that manushim tanumashritam. So, he descends in a human form. Or when he is in a human form, people think that they misunderstand him. Why do they misunderstand him? Because they do not know his supreme nature. So, it is not that God has a human-like form. Rather, the human form is godlike. You know that God has a human-like form. The human form is godlike. As he says, man is made in the image of God. It is not that God is made in the image of man. And then, Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram, I am the Lord of all living entities. Bhuta Maheshwaram. So, among all the living entities, I am the great Lord, Krishna is telling. So, why is he telling this? Because the ordinary living entities, when they come to this world, they have to assume a body which is separate from themselves. But that is not the case for me. Prabhupada gives the example of when a prisoner visits a jail, he has to wear the jail dress. But when the king visits, he doesn't have to wear the jail dress. He can go in his own self, same royal dress. So rather, when the soul comes to this world, he has to take a material body. When Krishna comes, he doesn't have to take a material body. He comes in his self, same spiritual body. Oh, this is Krishna told about the inconceivable relationship between him and the world. Now he's talking about those who don't understand that relationship. So basically, they understand him in an incorrect way or a partial way. That's why avajananti. So now Krishna describes that this misunderstanding is there. So what is the consequence of this misunderstanding? Param bhavam jananto. What will happen? Moghasha mogha karmano mogha jnana vichetasaha rakshasimasurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shritaha.
Those who are thus delusory are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In their deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their future activities and their culture of knowledge are all defeated.
So, Chakravarti Pada described that these three are referring to specific kinds of people. This is Mogha Karmana, refers to the karmis who aspire for Swarga. Mogha Jnana refers to the impersonalist who aspire for liberation. And interestingly, he says Mogha Asha refers to devotees who aspire for Vaikuntha. I'll explain that. So he says that Mogha Karmana refers to Karmakandis who aspire for Swarga. Mogha Jnana refers to Jnanis who aspire for Mukti. And Mogha Asha refers to devotees who aspire for Vaikuntha or Salokya, whatever. So he says, that means what? Basically, if even a devotee has a misunderstanding that Krishna's form is material, then even he will be Mogha. His effects will be frustrated. Of course, it's wrong to call such a person devotee, not a devotee at all. It's primarily a jnani with a sort of devotional exterior. But even bhakti will fail. And what is the example for this? From Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have Ramdas Vishwas. Isn't it? Chanting Lord Ram's name so fervently that even Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was impressed. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu paid no attention to him. He did not consider him to be exalted devotee. Yeah, that is okay. The point is that what he is telling is that if a devotee has this misunderstanding, I'm not giving that example on Ramdas Vishwas for a devotee aspiring for liberation. I was asking a devotee having an impersonal conception. So then such a person is disregarded. So generally, if somebody thinks Krishna's form is material, it is very difficult for such a person to think what is the spiritual world actually. So basically, a devotee's devotional aspirations, whatever they are, whether he may want to be in Salokya, he may think that, okay, Krishna's form is material. Chakravarti Pada explains one additional thing over here, very interesting, and this is a typical Gaudiya twist. He says, some people consider the Narayan form, the Vishnu form to be eternal, but they consider Krishna form to be temporary. This is a common idea there. Vishnu is the source of all avatars. Vishnu is original and Krishna says, such people are frustrated. Such people are frustrated. So, this specifically refers to those who worship Krishna but think that Krishna's form is temporary and Vishnu's form is eternal. So, the idea is that even a devotee with Mayavadi conceptions will be in trouble. That now, generally, if such a person is an impersonalist, he generally wants to merge into Brahman. So, that will be frustrated also. And Krishna is saying, not only will their endeavors be frustrated, but something more frightening he is saying. Rakshasim asurim chaiva. A demoniac and devilish. Now, what is the difference between Rakshasa and Asura? Asuras and Rajogana, Rakshasa and Tamoguna. Asuras, no, Chakravarti Pada says this. Asuras are in Rajoguna, Rakshasa are in Tamoguna. So, he says that Asura is, for example, Hiranyakashipu is Asura, Ravana is Asura, but Ghatotkach, Hidimba, they are Rakshasas. Now, Rakshasas means they have particular bodily form also. Asuras can also have a human-like form. You know, Hiranyakashipu had a human-like form. If you see on the 7th canto cover, Hiranyakashipu looks quite good-looking, isn't it? Even attractive. So, Rakshasas have a particular bodily form also, which is tamasic. Rakshasi Masuram Chaiva Prakriti Mohinim Shura. That means basically the Prakriti of the Rakshas and Asuras they assume. That means they become covered by Tamaguna and Rajoguna.
They'll have ugly looking features on here.
Yeah, fine. Hideous looking features. Okay. Then Krishna, for describing two verses, the destination of these people who misunderstand him, now turns to those people who understand him properly. Mahatmanastumam partha daivim prakriti mashritaha bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam.
O son of Pitha, those who are not deluded, the great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the supreme personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible.
Chakravarti Pada describes, especially what do they know as Bhutadi and Avyaya? That is my transcendental form. They understand my transcendental form is Bhutadi, it is the source of all living entities. And it is Avyaya, it is imperishable, it is not material form. So when they understand it like this, then what happens? They become Mahatmas. Mahatmas. And Anya Manaso means they are not attracted to Jnana or Karma or Yoga or anything else. These are Kevala Bhaktas. These are professors described. The word Mahatma, it came twice earlier. Once it was describing in 7.19, Bahunam Manamante. Sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. And so once again it came in 8.15 where it described Mamupetya tu Kaunteya, Mamupetya Punarjanma Dukkhalayam. Napnumanti Mahatmana Samsiddhim Paramamgataha. So, Mahatma refers to very exalted devotees. They may be Keval Bhaktas or even if they are not Keval Bhaktas, they are very exalted devotees. So, Krishna says, those who understand my form to be imperishable and worship me with undistracted mind, Ananya Manaso, then they are Mahatmas. And what do they do? Krishna describes them further. So this is the first verse in the Bhagavad Gita which actually describes devotional activity. Till now bhakti was talked about. But devotional activity is the first time described in the Bhagavad Gita over here. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha drudhavrataha namashyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. So, Chakravarti Pada beautifully, now from here on the devotional part will start a lot in this chapter. So he says, Satatam, he says, the devotees, these people, they are always serving me. The Karmakandis, they also glorify Krishna or Vishnu, but only at specific times. Just like we described, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was about to take birth, at that time all the Karmakandi people were also in the Ganga, chanting the names. Hari Hari, chanting the names of Hari. They think that the name of Hari is reserved only for those times like eclipses and other times. That's the only time we should chant it. But actually, Satatam, okay, they don't wait for any Deshakala Patam. They would always chant the holy names. So, in that pastime of Gopalu Goswami, they're always chanting. So, there is a nice verse over here, which is from the Vishnu Dharma, which says, how far chanting of the holy names of Krishna? There is no time, place, circumstance. Na desha niyamas tatra, na kala niyamos tatha. Na chishtadan nishedhosti, Sri Harer namni lubdhaka. Lubdhaka means if somebody is greedy for the holy name. Na desha niyamas tatra, there is no place. Na kala, at all times one can chant. And no uchishta. Now uchishta is related with some remnants, impurity. Nishebo, there is no impurity also. It's all times you can chant. Then Chakravarti Pad explains the word yatantaha, endeavor. Rupa says endeavoring with great determination. He says, what is this endeavor? Here's a nice example. This is a poor person who is a beggar. He goes and endeavors from a charitable person to give some wealthy person, to give me some charity. He says, like that, the devotee goes in the association of devotees and begs for Krishna's mercy, begs for Krishna's memory, begs for Krishna Katha. And cheer comes twice in this verse. Satam kirtayantaman vajitantasya drudhavata namashyantas chamam bhaktya. So he says, two processes of bhakti are described over here among the nine limbs of bhakti. Kirtan is described and Naman is described. But he says all the other processes are also included in this. This is which? This is Vishnu Dharma. Vishnu Dharma is just like Vishnu Purana. It's a book which glorifies Vishnu. You want to write it down? Okay. Now, after describing the glory of his devotees in these two verses, Krishna starts out talking about those who understand him partially. So first he described those who understood him incorrectly. Now he described those who understood him correctly. And now he describes those who understand him partially. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, if you don't understand Krishna, our progress is either partial or hallucinatory. So, hallucinatory, there is no progress at all. People think they are progressing. So, let's go to this verse now. This is a very crucial verse for understanding the flow of what is happening. Jnana yajnena chapyanye yajanto mam upasate ekatvena prutakvena bahudha vishvato mukham. So, jnana yajnena cha anye. Anye is others. Yajanto maam, they are worshipping me by yajanto maam upasate. Now, Prabhupada explained these three categories to people. Ekatvena is what? Those who think I am God, ahangro upasana they do. Pruthatvena bahudha. They consider that the different demigods, they are themselves supreme. And they consider one of them to be the supreme and they worship that. And Vishvato Mukham, those who worship the universal form, the universe itself or the manifestation in the universe. Now, Chakravarti Pad analyzes these into two categories. He says, Ekatvena, if they are offensive to the personal form of the Lord, they become Mayavadis. If they are not offensive to the personal form of the Lord, then only they are doing Jnana Yajna. Otherwise, this Ekatvena they already talked about in 11 and 12, isn't it? He doesn't have to talk about it again, but he's talking Anye. So that means, if they are not offensive to the personal form of the Lord, but they are thinking, I am that God, then that is not wrong. It is not wrong, because it is the partial truth. Prabhupada explains that, yes, they are at least understanding their spirit. And he says, and then he has another interesting understanding of this. He says, Ekatvena Pruthaktvena. He puts both of them together. Those who understand that I am one with God and I am different from God also. That is the Chinta Veda way. So, Ekatvena Pruthaktvena, if you put them together, then there is no confusion at all. You understand, I am one with God, I am different from God. I am one with God, I am different from God. I am one with God is Ekatvena, I am different from God is Pruthaktvena.
Ekatvena is I am God also, and let us, isn't that offensive?
Well, Brahma, that is Brahmavad. When does it become Mayavad? When we consider Krishna's form to be protected, product of Maya. Then it becomes Mayavad.
But Brahmavad is not offensive.
So many sections of scripture we talk about Brahmavad. In fact, in Uddhava Gita, one full chapter is pure Brahmavad only. And the chapter is also impersonal realization. And it's all. And there's no criticism when Krishna is delivering that. Krishna is teaching that to them. He says everywhere, you know, Brahma, aham, aham, Brahma, such a person thinks, and he offers obeisances to dogs and trees and plants, saying all of them are Brahma. So, you know. Oh, Shankaracharya is Maya. Shankaracharya's followers, at least what Shankaracharya taught, or at least the way his followers have understood what he has taught, that is Mayavad. So, Brahmavadis are those who are non-offensive.
Isn't it that one who thinks I am God, for whom the existence of actual God may not be there?
So we can have questions later.
Yeah, please. No questions now. Good. So, ekatvena prutatvena bahudha vishvato mukham. So now, this prutatvena bahudha, he explains in two ways now. Chakravarti Pad, that sometimes, like I remember the slide was there, pratikopasana. So ahangropasana, pratikopasana, and visharupasana. So pratikopasana means that when we consider the devata to be the representative of the Supreme Lord and worship him, then, for example, in the Gayatri Mantra, when we, the Gayatri Mantra, those of the Brahmanas chanted, you know, we actually, so there is, apparently it's a worship of sun god, Savitra. So Savitra is the name of sun god. So, are we worshipping the sun? Actually, we are in the 12th canto of the Vishnu Bhagavatam, there is a set of prayers where obeisances are offered to the sun. And described that the sun is a representative of Krishna. And not only that, further describes the sun planet, there is Surya Narayan who is living, who is the source of the empowerment of the sun. So, when somebody is worshipping the sun, knowing that I am worshipping the sun as a manifestation, as a representative of the Supreme Lord, then such a person can make advancement. But if you think the sun himself is supreme, then it's a problem. Then it's a problem. So, basically, then there is Vishwatomukham, worship of the universe. So now Krishna will start describing this worship of the universe, and this worship of the devatas, he will come back to it later in the next section. It starts from 20. Okay. So basically this 15th verse is critical to understand this chapter. So if we consider the ekatven to refer to in Mayavadis, then 11-12 as you described it. If we consider the Pratikopasana to refer to demigod worshippers, then 20 to 28 will describe them. And Vishwarupasana is being described over here in 16-19.
And if ekatvena is Brahmavad,
then Krishna doesn't talk about it much, and that's why Arjuna will ask this question later in the 12th chapter. Who are better among them? So that answer will clarify. Krishna is not condemning, he's not saying that it's offensive in the 12th chapter, he's simply saying that it's difficult. Yeah. So, let's go ahead now. Next verse. Aham kraturaham yajnaha svadaham aham aushadham mantroham aham evajyam aham agnir aham hutam.
But it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering.
So, these are all technical words. Prabhupada translates them non-technically. Now, Kratu is Chakravarti Pad. I just described two examples and we'll drop it at that. It says, Kratu is a Vedic Yajna, a Shruti Yajna, like the Agnishtoma Yajna. And Yajna refers to a Smriti Yajna, like the Vaishvadeva Yajnas. And there are different kinds of Yajnas, but the basic principle is that whatever is happening in the Yajna, Yajna is a highly, in one sense, material activity. But there are so many materials involved in it, there are so many material processes involved in it. You take materials and you light the fire. So in that sense, it's a highly material activity, not materialistic. It can be materialistic also, but it involves a lot of materials in it. So Krishna is saying, I am all this. How am I all this? Actually, all these are my energies. And if somebody understands this, so this verse can be related with Brahmarpanam Brahma Havir. That verse was there, 4.24. So instead of Brahma, Krishna has brought Aham over here. Now, does this literally mean that Krishna is saying, I am all this, I am the fire, I am the mantra, I am the agni? Yes, I am this, but it is not that I am only this. I am much more than this. But I am this also. So that is the idea, that these are all manifestations of Krishna. And then he describes further that, okay, this is the specific situation for yajna. But then when one is doing yajna and living in the material world, there are so many shelters that we have in this world. So all those shelters are my manifestations. So basically here Krishna, what is he telling? Somebody is living at materialistic consciousness and he is basically needs material facilities, which Yajna gives. He needs material shelters in terms of relatives and friends and everyone, caretakers. So they are also manifestations of Krishna. So Krishna is enabling us to see his connection with our material life and our material shelters. पिता हमस्य जगतो माता धाता पितामह वेद्यं पवित्रम ओंकार ऋग्साम यजुरेव च.
I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support and the grandsire, and the object of knowledge, the purifier and the celebrant home. I am also the rig, the sam and the other Vedas.
So generally, can ask him. It could be, because many of the names are from scripture, but we don't know. So here, generally, if you see in the 9th chapter, Krishna will talk about these three Vedas, Rig, Sam, Yajur. Later on also, the verse will come, Trayvidya Manasomapa Putta Papa. So basically among the four Vedas, the Rig Veda is used to invoke the Lord to come. The Sam Veda, so the Rig is used to invoke the Lord to come. When the Lord of the Devatas have come, Yajur Veda is used to actually perform the Yajnas. And when the deities, whoever they are, they appeared, Sam Veda is used to glorify them. Athar Veda is sort of appendix which contains all of them and some more things. So that's why many times the three Vedas in the world are used. So how is the idea? First you invoke. That's the Rig Veda, contains the invocations. Then when the invocations are with the Lord, when the deities have appeared, whoever they are, demigods or the Lord, then the Yajnas are performed. So that is the Yajur Veda describes the procedures of how to do the Yajna. How to literally do the Yajna. And along with the Yajna, offerings are going on, there is also verbal glorification. That is told in the Sam Veda. Then Krishna will tell further the same theme of. So Atharva is like anthology of all three. That's why it's not mentioned over here. Anthology means a collection. Collection of all three. Ratir Bharta Prabhu Sakshi Nivasa Sharanam Surud Prabhara Pralaya Sthanam Nidhanam Bicham Avyayam.
All the gold, the
now here Prabhupada has a
Samveda
to glorification. It contains very beautiful songs to glorify. So now we have Prabhupada's apparently Mayavadi purport.
Prabhupada is never completely against Mayavad, but this purport is sensational.
Now this is a previous purport. And so Prabhupada clarifies it, but Prabhupada also seems to say this. Previous verse. So he says, if you take a sentence out of context, you know, what does Prabhupada say? As such, these living entities who appear to be our father, mother, etc., nothing but Krishna. Not a Prabhupada immediately clarifies. Not only are our father and part and parcel of Krishna, but the creator, grandfather, grandmother are also Krishna. See, one says he is part and parcel of Krishna, now he says is Krishna. Actually, any living entity being part and parcel of Krishna is Krishna. So, he is taking about not in a quantitative sense, in a qualitative sense. Being part and parcel, he is Krishna. So, Prabhupada is clarifying it quite clearly, but it can be a little confusing. What is Prabhupada saying? That the part and parcel is not different from the whole, because it's qualitatively the same. So nice statement Prabhupada says, whatever we want to know through the Vedas is but a progressive step toward understanding Krishna. It's a progressive step, slow, gradual step towards going to Krishna. So now Krishna will conclude this section with one last verse. Tapamyaham aham varsham कृणामि उत्सृजामि च अमृतं चैव मृत्युश्च सदसच्चाहम् अर्जुन. So here Krishna is describing that basically everything that happens in the material world is a manifestation of him. You know, somebody lives, that is Krishna's mercy. Somebody dies, that is also Krishna's mercy. So Krishna, it is when rains come, that is Krishna's mercy. When rains don't come, that is also Krishna's mercy. It's all under Krishna's direction. So after describing, so now how is this all Vishwarupa Puja? When one understands that everything that is happening in the Vishwarupa is happening by the will of the Lord, and everything here is potentially sacred, then he is actually doing puja. So otherwise it's not puja. Yes, somebody sees rain happening, somebody sees rain not happening, that is not puja. Actually the connection in our consciousness has to be there. So now from here onwards Krishna will start talking about demigod worship. This is a Trishtup Chanda. त्रैविद्यामां सोमपापूत पापा यज्ञैरिष्ट्वा स्वर्गतिं प्रार्थयन्ते ते पुण्यमासाद्य सुरेन्द्रलोकम् अश्नन्ति दिव्यान् दिविदेव भोगान्.
Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights.
So, this is basically a repetition of what he told in 2.40 to 53. I talked about karma kanda, so how they go to heaven. But now, there he just told Bhogeshwara Prasaktana. They are attached and they cannot be determined for devotional service. But here he will describe how this is temporary. Yes. Somaras and Apsaras are very easily available there. Both are available. Because you know the tongue and the genitals are the greatest source of enjoyment. Both are available there. Somaras and Amrut are different. Somaras is not Amrut. Somaras is one particular ras which terminates them. Amrut is the nectar of immortality. तम भुक्त्वा स्वर्गलोकं विशालं शिणे पुण्ये मर्त्यलोकं विशन्ति एवं त्रैधर्म्यम् अनुप्रपन्ना गतागतं कामकामा लभन्ते.
When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure and the result of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death.
So here Krishna is using Martya Lokam to refer to our earthly planet system and Swarga Lokam to refer to the higher planet system. But A Brahma Bhona Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. So actually everything is Martya Loka. But sometimes our earthly planet system is specifically referred to as Martya Loka because death is quite quick over here as compared to the heavens. But everything is Martya Loka. And Trai Dharma, as I mentioned earlier, this refers to those who follow the three Vedas. Gata Agata. They come, they go. They don't get anything lasting. So this he contrasts with what happens to the devotees. How what they get is eternal. He will contrast that now. Ananyaschintayanto mam ye janaparyupasate esham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham.
But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditation into meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have.
Chakravarti Pad explains, Vahamya. He says, Krishna is saying, it's not that I make sure that the protection happens. He says, I do it personally. Vahamya, I carry it. So he says, just as a householder carries the burden of maintaining his family, I carry the burden of maintaining my devotees. And then he says, but Arjuna asks, but you know, isn't it improper for the devotees to burden you like this? He says, no, but the devotees don't burden me. He says, it is I out of my love accept this burden. And he says, just as, very intimate example he gives, he says, just as when a lover and a beloved are going together. The beloved can walk, but the lover out of his love picks the beloved and carries. He says, like that, I carry my devotees. Vaham, yam. I personally carry. Yeah? It is again Yathamamra Patate. So for who is Ananya Sintayantamam, there is full protection. Depending on our degree of surrender, there is protection. So, then after describing this, then he says that... No, yoga and shame, they have specific meanings. So, that is what Prabhupada is translating. That is standard translation of Prabhupada. I preserve what they have and I provide what they lack. That's standard for yoga and shema. Yogakshema mahamyaham also yogakshema. Nir yogakshema atmavan. That came in 2.45. Nitya Krishna. Don't worry about yoga and shema. Die because you have to understand you are the atma. And be realized and distributed in knowledge, don't worry about yogakshema. Krishna is telling here, now don't worry about yogakshema because atma gyan is far behind now. Now it is Bhagavad gyan. He says, don't worry about yogakshema because I will take care. I will take care of you. Arjuna Acharya is here only, yes. You know, he was thinking that who will take care of my baby, my child, my mother, his wife had died. All of you know the story, isn't it? Arjuna Acharya was a Vaishnava. Yeah. Arjuna
Acharya.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, there are two stories. Two different stories. Both of you know them. Or you know both of them. So Shri Goswami's story is basically that his wife passed away. Isn't it? Arjuna Acharya was that. Krishna came and personally provided the needs of his devotees. So Krishna is clearly comparing. First he told us that they get something which is temporary, which will go away by the passage of time. For my devotees, I will preserve what they have. And again he comes back to demigod worship to point out what is the problem. Why don't the demigods get this? Krishna says, Arjuna says, why don't you offer the same protection to demigods also? He says, the emphasis here is told in the last word of this verse. Ye pyanya devata bhakta yajante shraddhayanvita te pi mameva kaunteya yajantya vidhi purvakam.
Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way.
So, there are several popular Hinduism websites which give this verse without the last line. Those who worship other gods, worship only me. Actually worship me only. Now, the emphasis of this verse is not that they actually worship me. The emphasis is that their worship is avidhipurvakam. Now, how can we say that is the emphasis? But look at the context. The next verse is the elaboration of avidhipurvakam. What is the meaning of avidhipurvakam? That will be described in the next verse. Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhureva cha natu mam abhijananti tatvenatascha vantite.
I am the only enjoyer, the master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who don't recognize my true transcendental nature fall down.
So, what is avidhipurvakam? Natu mam abhijananti. They are not doing it properly because they do not know my truth. They do not know me properly. And what is the result of that? Chavantite. They will fall down. So Krishna is very clearly telling this here that they are worshipping other gods and they don't know that I am the supreme enjoyer, supreme object of all yajnas, supreme lord, and therefore they will fall down. So it's not a detail over there. It is the emphasis what Krishna is saying. Avidhipurvakam. So they will fall down. On the other hand, he said, my devotees never fall down. Now Krishna gives, after telling that they will fall back, Krishna gives a general principle of what happens. I said, why are you partial, Krishna? That you know, your devotees you are protecting, but the demigod worshippers, you are letting them fall down. He says, no. This is an elaboration of Yathama Prapatyante. Whoever you worship, that's what you will get. Yanti devavrata devan pitrun yanti pitravrataha bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti matyajinopimam.
Those who worship the demigods will take one among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirit will take one among the ascended beings. And those who worship me will live with me.
So, after describing that, this is a very good verse for refuting, all paths lead to the same goal. Very clear, different paths, different goals, Krishna is telling. After describing this, Krishna says, Yanti madhyajino pipam. Okay, those who worship you come to me. Krishna, how should you be worshipped? That he will describe in the next verses.
Are
the demigod worshippers considered demons? Krishna explains in the 16th chapter that there are two categories of living beings. Daubhuta sarga lokesvin, daiva asuraivacha. They are divine and they are demoniac. And then he classifies the divine and demoniac based on qualities first. And towards the end, he classifies them. He says that therefore you should follow Shastra and save yourself for demoniac qualities. And that purport, Daubhuta sarga lokesvin, Prabhupada says, the classification between these two is based on adherence to scripture or non-adherence to scripture. So if the demigod worshippers are worshipping according to scriptural direction, then they are not considered demoniac. That's because they have accepted a higher authority. But otherwise they are considered demoniac. Now of course, this is only one definition. Because somebody might be accepting scriptural forms of worship, and like Hiranyakashipu, he is worshipping Brahma, so demigod worship, but he is demoniac. So there are different criteria which we have to use at different times. So one criteria is the quality which a person has. Another criteria is whether he is following scripture or not. Another criteria is what is ultimately his purpose. Therefore, in general, we understand that there are divine beings, there are demoniac beings, and there is a large number of beings who are in between, in the gray area. They can be under divine influence, they can be under demoniac influence. Most people in this world are highly influentiable, and few people are influential. So there are certain divine people who are influential, certain demoniac people who are influential. And most masses are influentiable. So whoever influences them, they will get influenced by that. So if we preach, we attract people, they will be influenced by us. But if we don't preach, then Maya is doing so much preaching, materialism, atheism, all these things are there, they will influence them. So then, although they are not demoniac right now, they will become demoniac. So we can say that those people are not devotees, many of them are currently under demoniac influence. They may not be outright demoniac, but they are under demoniac influence. But they can come under devotee influence. Okay, because as I said, there are different classifications given for different purposes. We also have to see, the Madhyamadhikari doesn't see Daiva and Asura. He says, Prema Maitri Krupopeksha. Madhyamadhikari's vision is not, this is a demon. He's a devotee, he's a demon. He says, is he innocent? Is he envious? So innocent means somebody who might be under demoniac influence, but he himself is not envious. That's also one category which is to be included over there. Yes, I have to park this question. Pitraloka is a very complicated loka. Mostly we don't want to go there. So,
nobody performs
Shraddha. Right, so now let's move forward to. So, Krishna, after describing this, Yanti Madhyajinopiyam, those who worship me will come back to me. Now, earlier he has told, my abode is permanent, my abode is eternal, my abode is supreme. Arjuna says, okay, how those who want to worship you, how should they worship you? So, Krishna elaborates over here. Patram pushpam palam toyam, tume bhaktya prayachati. Tadaham bhakti upaharitam ashnami prayatatmanah.
If one offers me love and devotion, will be flower,
so this is one verse which is the closest to deity worship in the Bhagavad Gita. No, because deity worship is not explicitly mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita for many reasons. One reason is, as we said, Bhagavad Gita is emergency scripture. And Bhagavad Gita's purpose is not to tell the details of bhakti. Bhagavad Gita's purpose is to establish the principles of bhakti. Establish that bhakti is the supreme sadhana. So how to perform bhakti, that Arjuna knows already. Arjuna to some extent knows how to perform jnana, how to perform bhakti, how to perform karma. But what to perform, that is Arjuna's question. So, there are not many details in the Bhagavad Gita, but that is not because Bhagavad Gita is in any way against deity worship. The patram, pushpam, phalam, if you don't accept deity worship, when Krishna is there, you can offer fruit and flower to him. But if Krishna is not there, what will you offer? To the sky? To Brahman? It doesn't make any sense. So, Madhyaji also comes many times. So, Madhyaji can also be referred to deity worship. To worship me. But worship can be in many ways. Worship can be jnana, jnana, chapyanya. This is the most clearest verses, verse which refers to deity worship in the Bhagavad Gita. Uddhava Gita, there is one full chapter on deity worship. Full chapter is there. Very systematically described. And basically deity worship is dealt with in the Puranas quite a bit and most exhaustively in the Pancharatras. Pancharatras are also considered part of Smriti and they deal highly with deity worship. That's why we have this Pancharatra Padip. Now, Prayata Atmana means one who is a pure soul. So, he should offer with bhakti and with a pure heart. Heart is impure. Krishna says, I will not accept it. That the Chakravarti passage can also mean that whoever is offering me, that itself is the purity of his intention. So, he consoles us. And then, after describing this, this seems to be a restricted activity, isn't it? Patram, pushpam, phalam, but you offer this to me. But there are so many other things I do in my life. What should I do about that? So many other things which you do in our life. Krishna says, all that you offer to me. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhosi dadasi yad yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva madarpanam.
Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me.
So now, in this verse shows us the analytical genius of Vishwanatha Thakur. So he says, this verse describes a special level of bhakti, which is called Karma Jnana Mishra Pradhani Bhut Bhakti. And he gives an elaborate analysis of why this particular level. So, he says, this is the analysis as is put briefly over here. This verse, what is the level of this bhakti? He says it is not Sakam Bhakti. Because this devotee does not have material desires. So basically Arjuna is asking Krishna, you have glorified bhakti, but what level bhakti should I, what should I do? How should I perform bhakti? So Krishna tells Arjuna, you are not yet qualified for kevala bhakti. So what should you perform? Don't give up jnana and karma. But don't have selfish desires. Because sakam bhakti is low class. Be detached from the fruits of your work. But don't do karma yoga. Because I don't want you to offer karma. In karma yoga basically what happens? It's not just activity that is offered. It's only scripturally prescribed activity that are offered. There is, whatever is done in his life, in karma yoga's life, whatever is scripturally prescribed, he offers that to the Lord. It's not that in karma yoga, satatam kirtayanto mama, constant engagement with the absolute is there. It's only when whatever scripture is scripturally ordained. Like you remember, I earlier talked about nitya karma, nanitya karma and kamya karma. Three types of duties. So kamya karma is fruity activities which you do to get specific results. So basically in karma yoga, the nitya karma and the namittik karma are offered to the Lord. So Krishna says, don't be at that level. Offer everything to me. Therefore he says, it's not even karma yoga.
All activities are offered.
No, because you are offering, I am talking about why this is not karma yoga, because Arjuna is offering all activities. Yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad juhosi, yad asnasi. Because he is offering all activities, therefore it's not karma yoga. Then, because this verse is talking about what level? Then he said, not Jnana Yoga, because in Jnana Yoga, there is not much knowledge of God, the personal nature of God. Even if one accepts God as a person, when we are talking about Jnana Mishra Bhakti, then there is not much knowledge about the personal aspect of God. But Krishna has talked a lot about his personal aspect. And Arjuna knows Krishna as a person, therefore don't be at Jnana Yoga. And then interestingly, he says, why this is not Kevala Bhakti? What is the difference between this level and Kevala Bhakti level? This is very subtle. He says that Kevala Bhakti means whatever we do, first we offer it to God and then we do it. First we offer it to God and then we do it. Iti Pumsarpita Vishnu Bhaktischenna Lakshana. Then this is the second part of that verse, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. He described those 5-9 limbs of bhakti and then he says, Iti Pumsarpita Vishnu. When these are offered to Vishnu, then they become bhakti. So, in this case, what is Krishna telling Arjuna? You do and then offer. You do and then offer. That is why it is not Kevala Bhakti. Kevala Bhakti means first, whatever we are doing, we are thinking that this is for Krishna. Like Manas Puja. Like many times when we cook, first we cook and then we offer. But Madhavendra Puri, first only was thinking, oh, this kheer would be so nice if we could offer it to Gopal. His mind had already offered it. And then he was thinking how to cook it. So in his mind, already everything is connected with Krishna. So this sort of fine level of analysis shows how gross our consciousness is. Really, we have a long way to go. So, Chakravarti Padamani wrote this Madhuri Kadambani also, which is also quite an analytical book, different levels of bhakti. So, this is the level which he talks about. Now, after describing this, it comes back to, now Krishna will talk about the destination. Earlier he talked about the destination of the demigod worshippers. What is their destination? They come back to this world. Shine Punne Marthilokam Vishanti. Then he was telling, what is the destination of the devotees? He told Yanti Madhi Ajinopima, but he will elaborate this more. If Arjuna practices this level of bhakti, eventually what will happen to him? Shubha Shubha Falai Revam Mokshase Karma Bandhane Sanyasa Yoga Yuktatma.
In this way, you will be free from bodies to work and his auspiciousness and inauspicious desires. If your mind takes on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me.
Yes, so Vimukto, you be fully liberated, specially liberated, and Maam Upaishyasi. So earlier we discussed how even the Yoga Mishra or the Gyan Mishra Bhaktas can also attain Mukti. They can also attain Mukti. But they will either get Salokya or they will get Vaikuntha. But Krishna is saying this is a special Vimukti by which Maam Upaishyasi, you will become my associate. You will come back to me. So here from 20 to 28, the comparison of demigod worship and devotions and worship to the Supreme Lord is concluded. From the demigod worship, they come back here again and again. The devotees, they return to the Supreme Lord. Then further, because Krishna is talking about devotional service, he glorifies devotional service further. And he will tell in this last section how devotional service can elevate anyone and everyone. Keval Bhakti elevates even the most fallen. That is the theme now. It's a continuation of the glorification of Kevala Bhakti. But the comparison with Vimala worship has ended now. So Arjuna again gets this question, that isn't this partiality, Krishna? That in those who are devotees, you bring them back to you, and those who are not devotees, you don't bring them back. He says, no. He describes how it is not partiality. Samoham sarva bhuteshu videshosti napriya ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyam.
I envy no one, nor am partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend and is in me, and I am also a friend to him.
Chakravarti Pad says, Mai te teshu chapyaham. I am in them and they are in me. He says there's nothing special about this. Because as a super soul, he is in everything and everyone's heart and everyone is in him. Sarabhutastham atmanam sarabhutani jatmai. So what is special about this? So he says, Mai te teshu chapyaham means, he says, as the devotees are attached to me and as their hearts are in me, similarly, I am attached to my devotees and my hearts are in them. And he quotes Sadhavam Hridayam Mayam, Sadhunam Hridayam Tadaham. He didn't quote it here, but that's the verse which is brought to mind by the context. So he says, actually, Mai Te Teishu Chapyaham, they are dear to me. As I am dear to them, they are dear to me. And is this partiality? It is not partiality because Krishna does two things. First of all, he openly declares the glories of bhakti. When is it partiality? You know, if some person is a minister and without telling anyone, you know, he gets related to become appointed as in some government job. And doesn't tell others also. It's nepotism. It's considered partiality towards your relatives. Krishna openly tells, I am going to give all these facilities to my devotee. Do you want to become my devotee? He openly glorifies bhakti. And secondly, he openly gives everybody opportunities to become a bhakta. If somebody, some wealthy person is doing, some politician is doing some partiality towards his relatives, now others cannot become his relatives. Those are relatives, they are relatives. Those are not relatives, they are not relatives. Krishna is telling, yes, I am going to give special blessings to my devotees, but I declare it openly, I don't hide it. And secondly, I allow everyone to be my devotee. Therefore, it's not partiality. It's not partiality because the opportunity is open for everyone. And so he says, Chakravarti Pasa, sometimes the scriptures compare the Lord to a Kalpataru. You know, he fulfills whatever desires we have. Like, Rigama Kalpataru Gautam Phalam. That is compared to Kalpataru. But sometimes the scriptures compare the Lord to the Kalpataru. He says this is a very inadequate comparison. Why? The Kalpataru simply gives us what we desire. But especially with respect to devotees, it doesn't end over there. He says, when the devotees serve the Lord, the Kalpataru doesn't become attached to whoever is begging for him. The Lord becomes attached to the devotee. And then he says, further, the person who is approaching the Kalpataru, he doesn't become attached to the Kalpataru except for getting what he wants from me. He says, my devotees, they are attached to me without wanting anything from me. And thirdly, he says, the Kalpataru doesn't become the enemies of those who hate those who are approaching. And he says, those who approach me, my devotees, if somebody troubles them, I become their enemy. So in this way, the Kalpataru analogy is very incomplete because it does not take into account the personal nature and the heart, loving heart of the Lord. So now Krishna will describe further how maite teshu chapyam. What is the speciality? How are the devotees in him and how is he in the devotees? So that he'll describe in the next verses. So his special of relationship with his devotees as compared to everyone else. Api chet suduracharo bhajate mamananyabha sadhureva samantavya samyagyavasito hi saha.
Even if one commits the most unknown action, if he is engaged in devotee service, he is to be considered a saint because he is properly situated in his determination.
So, here he is telling that Arjuna says that Krishna, okay, you are partial to your devotees because they love you, that is fine. But sometimes the devotees love you, but they apparently misbehave also. They misbehave also. Then how can you call them as your devotees? Even if they misbehave, if they are determined to serve, bhajate imam ananya bhak. That means they don't, two things ananya bhak, Chakravarti Pasa means, they don't take to possess any other person other than bhakti, and they don't go for shelter to anyone other than me. That is ananya bhak. They may not be able to be fixed in bhakti, in the practice of the principles, but they don't give up their determination to practice bhakti, they don't give up their determination to serve me alone as the object of service. Then, you should consider them sadhur eva samantavya. You should consider yourself to be a devotee. Now, there is no direct verse which talks about Vaishnava aparadha in the Bhagavad Gita. But this gives us an indication of Vaishnava aparadha. Because if somebody is so dear to Krishna, Krishna is saying, now the word sadhu is a very exalted word. And Krishna has talked about sadhu only once earlier in the Gita. When is that? Paritranaya sadhunam, 4.8. So he comes to deliver the sadhus. And he is telling that these people who are apparently misbehaving are also sadhus. You should consider them to be sadhus. So, samyak vyavasito hi saha, the determination is strongly situated. We'll come to that. So Arjuna asks this question, okay, if somebody is practicing bhakti and he will become purified, that is good. Arjuna says here that, you know, okay, you are saying that he is a non-devotee, but what if he is doing wrong activities? So Krishna tells in the next verse, Shipram bhavati dharmatma shashva shantim nigacchati kaunteya pratijani namevata
pranashati. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes.
So, Kshipram is quickly. The word Kshipram came once earlier. We were talking about demigod worship in 4th chapter. Kshipram himanushe loke siddhir bhavati karmaja, 4.12. So, Kshipram bhavati dharmatma. He becomes a religious soul quickly. And then he will become Shashwat Shanti. Eternally you become peaceful. So Arjuna says, okay, if he becomes righteous, that is good. But what if he doesn't become righteous? Still, he says, Kaunte Pratyanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati. My devotee will never be lost. So, now, Chakravarti Pad gives very beautiful purport over here. We don't have time to read the whole purport, but basically he says that Krishna says Kshipram means quickly. So that just like if a person is sick, and because of sickness, fever is there, and the body is very hot. But if the medicine is taken, if the medicine has been taken, it's only a matter of time that the fever will go away. So say like that, if the devotee is practicing devotional service, lust may be very visible right now. Greed may be very visible. But because the medicine is taken, it is only a matter of time when the lust, anger, greed will all go away. And kshipram bhavati dharmana. Quickly he will become my devotee. And quickly he will not become my devotee, he will become righteous. And even if he doesn't become righteous, still you should consider him saintly. Still he will never perish. So, here Krishna is revealing his love for those who surrender to him, even if they deviate later on, even if they have some difficulties later on. Because Bhakti Sanatana described one of the qualities of Krishna is that he is grateful. So, whenever anyone renders any service to him, he is always grateful for that service. And now, to some extent, if a devotee does wrong, the laws of nature may act on him. Like we discussed earlier, the Bharat Maharaj may get a lowly body, but the important thing is the Lord does not forget him. The Lord does not forget him. The Lord arranged for him to take birth as a deer, not anywhere in the forest, near a hermitage. And the Lord, as the super soul, gave him the guidance so that he could continue practicing bhakti. So that when we say name bhakta pranashyati, in this context, it is referring to spiritual protection. Although often we use this to refer to material protection also. But it is referring to protection of this context. Yes, the devotee may fall back, but he will be spiritually protected. He will surely be protected sounor or later. And of course, he says, Kaunte Pratijani, he. Kaunte, you declare. You know why he says that? Because he knows that in the future, he says, I have already made a promise. The Bhagavad Gita is about to start. And I already made a promise that I will not raise weapons. But I will have to break that promise. Because when Bhishma is going to fire his weapons, I will have to break that promise. So I will be known as the breaker of my promises. So my word may not be so reliable. But this is such an important thing for me. I want people to have faith. He says, Arjuna, you go with drum and bugles and cymbals to a public assembly and announce. He says, what should you announce? Kaunte Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashyati. My devotee will never perish. So Krishna will himself do Pratijanihi also in 18.64. He says, we use the word Pratijani. Or that Sarva Guhyatamam Bhuya Shrunu Me Paramam Vacha Ishto. No. Ishto Simedramiti Tato Bakshamite Hitam Manmanabha Mad Bhakto Madhya Jimam Namaskuru Mame Vaish Satyam Te Pratijane Priyosime. Pratijane also comes out there. Declare publicly. Krishna is going to declare himself also. But here it is Arjuna, you declare. You declare that my devotee will never perish. So, as devotees, you know, we should always get hope from Krishna's compassion. What is that verse? In the deity worship, Pujari, what is that verse? Pranam, pranam, sandharamyaham, pratijnatava govinda, name bhakta pranashyati, si samsrutya samsrutya, pranam, pranam, sandharamyaham. So this is how I sustain myself. My devotee will never perish. So now we have to always see this from two sides. One side is that the Lord is always very compassionate. But you know, the devotee's devotional attitude is that he never abuses the Lord's compassion. It's not that we justify our wrongdoings by saying that the Lord is compassionate. Rather, what we see is that, yes, whatever mistakes we may commit, despite our best efforts, the Lord will forgive. But the whole idea is always that the devotee feels that I should not do any wrong. If he does any wrong, he feels that I am so sinful, I am bringing a disgrace to the Vaishnava assembly. Chakravarti Pad says that in the purport. So again, here the principle is yathana prapadyante again. See, many times there are huge progresses in the scripture sometimes. You know? Once you do this, then yadiya nama pihari haratya shesham giri prasaran api paparashi. chant the name of the Lord once, sins as big as a mountain will be destroyed by that. There are promises like that. I'm chanting so many times, nothing has happened. So actually, bhakti is not a mathematical process. If we try to be mathematical with Krishna, Krishna will be mathematical with us. And then we'll be in real trouble. Isn't it? We have done so many wrong things. So, we have to be devotional. So, Krishna is expressing his heart. And when we have to understand Krishna's heart, we have to use our heart. We cannot use our head over here. And say, Krishna is saying this, why is this happening to this devotee? Why is this happening to this? How can Krishna do like this to protect his devotees who are sinful? We have to approach with the heart. Approach with the heart. So, there was one devotee in Chowpatty who had a lot of problems, and because of some wrong behavior on his part, the devotees had to take some disciplinary action and other things against him. So afterwards, he was a very close friend of Gopinath many years ago. Then Maharaj was himself involved in it. So then he went to America, and after about 6 or 7 years, he came back to India. So Gopinath asked Maharaj, "Maharaj, how should I behave with him?" Maharaj told him that your relationship as a Vaishnava with him should be unchanged. As a manager, you may have to deal with him in a particular way. And you dealt with him and that is over. He said, that is over. Now as a Vaishnava, you should deal with him as a Vaishnava. So it's not so easy for us always to separate the spiritual relationship and the manager relationship. But managerially, we may have to do certain things for certain reasons. But always, we also have to have a spiritual view where we see everybody as a devotee, despite their limitations and their shortcomings. So, then Chakravarti Pad says that what to speak of accidental faults in a devotee, accidental shortcomings of a devotee, even if a devotee has inherent shortcomings, still I don't care for it. Still bhakti will overcome that. So accident faults means the devotee is well situated, but he sometimes does something wrong. But if somebody has inherent fault, that means he is low-born, he is papayoni, still he can be elevated by bhakti. That is the connection between that and this verse. Māmi pārtha vyāpā śrityā ye pisyo pāpa yonayā sriyo vaishyās tathā śudras te piyānti parāṅgatim.
O son of Pṛtha, those who take shelter in me, though they be born of lower birth, women, vaishyās and śudras can attain the supreme destination.
So, here Krishna is telling that those are low born. Why are they low born? Because of their past bad karma. And the low born do not have spiritual intelligence. They may have some wrong behavior also, but just add, it doesn't matter to me. Bhakti can, they will also attain the supreme destination. And this is basically a rhetorical statement to emphasize what is going to come in the next verse. So if even they can attain the highest destination, then what to speak of? These people. Kim punar brahmana punya bhakta rajarishayastatha anityam asukham lokam imam prapya bhajaswamaha.
How much more this is so of the righteous brahmana, the devotees and the saintly king, therefore having come to this temporary visible world, engage in loving service of the
king. Yes. So, here, actually Chakravarti Pad says, bhakta refers to both, the rajarishi and the brahmana. Prabhupada used three categories. That if the Brahmana and the Rajarshi are devotees, then how much more it applies to them? They will surely attain the supreme destination. There is no need for them to be discouraged. And here is another equivalent of Dukkhala and Ashashvatam. That is, Anityam Asukham Lokam, temporary and miserable. So why is Krishna talking about it over here? You know, sometimes some people say Vedic philosophy is very pessimistic. Actually, the pessimism is just so that we can take the optimism of bhakti seriously. So Krishna is telling, see, bhakti is so glorious and you are already Rajarshi, you will surely be elevated. And if you are not going to practice bhakti, what are the alternatives there? You have to stay in this world, which is Atyam Asukham. So why stay over here? Anyway, come out. And Prabhupada's purport is very insightful over here. So he says that there are classifications like high and low, and in the material world there are classifications of people, but after all this world is not a happy place for anyone. Very categorical. He says, this world is temporary and full of miseries, not habitable for any gentleman. Okay, sometimes the dualities of this world take up so much of our mental energy. No, he is a good singer, I am not a good singer. He is a good speaker, I am not a good speaker. He is a good manager, I am not a good manager. You know, for us, we don't have the dualities. He is wealthy, I am poor. But we have these dualities in our mind. Isn't it? So, but you know, ultimately, even if somebody is a good manager, good singer, good speaker, that is not what is going to make him happy. That is not what is going to make him spiritually advanced. It is his devotional attitude, the devotional service that is going to make him advance. And that opportunity is there for everyone. So, for everyone, this is anityam asukham lokam. The only person for whom it is anitya, not anitya and asukha, is for one who is focused or advanced devotionally. And that opportunity is there for everyone. And then Krishna gives the concluding instruction in this verse. Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru ame vaishyasi sadhyatvaivam atmanam matparayanah.
Is your mind always in thinking of me? Because my devotees offer obeisance to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.
Yes, so he's reassuring Arjuna, you will surely come to me. And with this verse, he completes his 9th chapter. So we'll have a 5-minute break.
Yes.
And we'll start and we'll see how much we can do with the 10th chapter. That means we had planned 100 verses today. That would require 17 verses per hour. So in 3 hours, we have completed 34 instead of in 2 hours, 34. So we'll have to go a little fast. Now here's the overview of the 10th chapter. The 10th chapter is also starting off without any question from Arjuna. And you know, Krishna is becoming ecstatic. Krishna likes to glorify bhakti also. So actually Krishna glorifies himself so that he can glorify bhakti. It is not that Krishna wants to glorify himself. So now again, after establishing Kevala Bhakti as the topmost, and talking about Kevala Bhakti, he talks about further knowledge about himself by which that Kevala Bhakti can be solidified. So in that sense, the starting and the motivating theme of this chapter is similar to the previous chapter. So he is going to talk now about how rare knowledge about him is. You know, earlier he had talked about this theme that manushya nama sahasrishu, very few people know him. So now he had not emphasized that too much till now. He has given knowledge about himself, but how that knowledge is so rare, sudurlabha, he had said once. That one who knows me, one who surrenders to me is very rare. And in the previous verse, he has talked about how that certain people misunderstand him. But now he will emphasize how it's very, very rare to understand him for everyone. And then he will talk about how bhakti is the means to understand him. So, verses 1 to 7 are, they contain that famous verse of Name Vidu Suragana. Basically, Krishna, nobody knows Krishna. Then 8 to 11 is what Ramanujacharya calls as the Chitur Shloki Gita. Vishwanath Chakra Thakur will describe some other section as the Tri Shloki Gita, which we'll discuss later. So Chitur Shloki Gita is here. And then 12 to 18 is Arjuna's response. Arjuna accepts Krishna's glories. He says, please tell me more about your glories. And Krishna tells his devotees for the remaining chapter. Okay. Let's start. Okay. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Bhuya Eva Mahabaho Shunume Paravambacha Yatte Ham Priyamanaya Vakshami Hitkamyaya.
Supreme Personality of God, it says, listen again, O mighty young Arjun, because you are my dear friend, for your benefit I shall speak to you further, giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained.
So, Bhuya means again, and Paramam Vachaha, supreme instructions. So, how is Krishna giving the Paramam Vachas again? Because previous chapter also said Bhuya Tamam, that is best, most secret, and here is a supreme. So, Bhuya Eva Mahabhava Shunume Paramam Vacha. So now Prabhupada translated supreme as better than what I has given before. Because Krishna is going to talk about something which is more relevant to us. He's going to talk about vibhutis. And also going to talk about bhakti. In a slightly different way. We'll see that. And yatteham priyamanaya. So priyamanaya, Prabhupada explained this, that because you are dear to me. And Chakratipala explains, because you love me, because you consider me priya, therefore I am giving you this knowledge. That means something like, you are anasuya way, you are not envious, because you love me, so I am telling you more about myself. And then he starts by describing that what I am going to tell you is not so ordinary. It's something which even great people don't know. Name vidusura ganaha prabhavam namah arshayaha aham adirhi devanam arshinam cha sarvashaha.
Neither the host of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences, for in UP district I am the source of the demigods and sages.
Yes. So Krishna is telling that they generally higher than the human beings are these two people. The devatas are higher in power, the rishis are higher in knowledge. So power is a kshatriya quality, knowledge is a brahmana quality. But although these qualities are there, they are higher than the humans, but neither of them can know me. He says, Arjuna says, okay, the devatas cannot know because they are not so enlightened. No, even if the rishis are more enlightened, even they cannot know me. Why? Aham adirhi devanam. Because I am the source of everyone. He says, the child cannot know everything about the father. Because the child came after the father. So there is so much of the life of the child, of the father, the child can never know. So like that, the devatas and the rishis cannot know about me, he says. But then contrast, he says, that one who knows me, he will become purified and liberated. Yo mam ajamana dincha vetti lok maheshwaram asam mura samarteshu sarva papai pramuchyate.
He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as supreme lord of all the worlds, he only undivided among men is free from all sins.
So when I first used to read Bhagavad Gita, maybe 10, 11 years ago, I used to wonder so many times, Krishna said, you cannot know me, you cannot know me. So one of the boys was coming for our program, at that time he said, if Krishna himself says you cannot know him, then don't need to study only. No need to know him only. No, although we cannot know him, by our normal means of intellectual analysis, but if we know him, there is a glorious result. What is that glorious result? Sarva papai pramuchyate, will become free from all sins. And what do we need to know about him? Yo mam ajam anadim cha, that I am unborn and imperishable. And also that, although I appear like an ordinary human being, I am Lokamaheshwaram. I am the lord of all lokas, all people. Where did the word Maheshwaram come earlier? Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. One more place. Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram. So Maheshwaram. So sometimes people think that Maheshwar refers to Shiva. But it's not necessarily Maheshwara. Krishna is also called as Parameshwara, is called as Maheshwara also. So these are Maheshwara, Parameshwara, Ishwara. These are not proper nouns, they are common nouns. They can refer to anyone. That's like city. City can refer to anyone. Or Prime Minister. Or Prime Minister, you know. It can be this Prime Minister now, that can be Prime Minister. So these proper common nouns don't describe any specific person. So then, if one understands this, now why is this a problem? Because Krishna appears to be like a historical being who is living at a particular time in history. He has appeared in this world, he was born at a particular time. So you should not get deluded by that. Yomam ajam anadim cha. So he appears to be like a person who was born at a particular time, and he's a ruler of a particular patch of land called Dwarka. No. He's not born at a particular time, he's eternal, and he's not the ruler of a particular patch, he's the ruler of the whole universe, not just universe, all of existence. One who understands this. Now, suddenly Krishna seems to take off track and giving a long list of qualities. But he's telling that how, just as the devatas and the rishis come from me, and so they cannot understand me. So generally, people are speaking in this world, people people consider many qualities to be very good and virtuous as qualifications for knowledge. But he says even these qualifications come from, these qualities come from me only. And therefore by these qualities you cannot know me. That's why he's talking about these qualities. So theme is everything comes from Krishna, everyone comes from Krishna. So even the qualities come from Krishna. Buddhir jnanam asam moha kshama satyam dama shama sukha dukha bhava bhava cha bhayam evacha ahimsatam tatushtis tapodanam yasho yashaha bhavanti bhava bhutanam matta eva prithag vidha.
Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness, distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone.
Matta eva. So, generally, buddhir, jnana, asammoha, these are virtue, they are good qualities. And they are considered to be in sattva-guna. But sattva-guna is also matta evet tanvadi nattoham teshu temai. Krishna told us in 7.12. The modes come from me. So by this buddhi jnana sammoha, one cannot know Krishna. Now Prabhupada gives a brief definition of these qualities in the purport. I'll come to that. So, what does Prabhupada say is intelligence? Intelligence refers to the power to analyze things in their proper perspective. And knowledge refers to understanding what is matter and what is spirit and what is matter. And then like that he goes on and gives a brief description of each of these qualities. And here basically, when Krishna goes over these qualities, aham sa satamta tushti. So most of them are sattva-guni qualities. But even by these sattva-guni qualities, one cannot know me. And sukham dukham bhava bhava. That means existence, life, death, fear, fearlessness. So basically, here Krishna is talking about goodness, passion and ignorance. So generally death is an activity which is in the mode of ignorance. It's destruction. The body is destroyed. So whatever be the mode of such a person is, you cannot know me by these things alone. That's the point. So bhava bhava, life, death. Yes, it is not just by dying. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told whom? Sanatana Goswami. If by committing suicide I could attain Krishna, then I would have committed suicide hundreds of times. So it is not just by these that we can know him. So either by qualities or by activities, we cannot know him. There are certain activities. At a material level we cannot know him. Then he describes further, telling, so earlier he said that even the rishis cannot know me. So he elaborates on this now by giving a specific example of very famous rishis who cannot know him. Maharishaya sapta purve chatvaro manavastatha madbhava manasa jata yesham loka ima praja.
Seven great sages, and before them were four other great sages, and the one who is covered to the mankind, come from me. Born from my mind, and all the living entities populating the various plants, descend from me. Then.
So Prabhupada explains in the purport that this is describing the genealogical summary of the universe. Nice word, what is that? Genealogical synopsis of the universal population. So all of us are coming from one of these gotras of the Saptarushis. And therefore, he says, sir, if they cannot know me, then how can all of you who are my descendants or their descendants know me? So that is the whole theme. Why is he talking about this? They come from me and so they don't know me. So that verse 2 is being elaborated over here. And again Krishna comes back to the theme. But if you can know me, what will happen? Etam vibhutim yogam cha mama yoveti tatvataha so vikalpena yogena yujyate natra samshayaha. So, you will become wholehearted in my devotional service. Vikalpa, there will be no alternative left. So what you have to understand? Earlier I said that you have to understand my birth and my activities. Here what you have to understand slightly changed. Vibhuti and yoga. So this gives a hint. Krishna is saying that there are two things which he will describe in the chapter subsequently. So yoga is bhakti yoga, which he will describe in the next four verses, and vibhuti is what he will describe later on in the chapter after Arjuna's question. So if you understand these two things, then we will become fixed in him, fixed in wholehearted devotional service. So the whole theme here is about how Krishna is very difficult to know. Then Krishna tells his position. Chapter shloka starts, the second section. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhakti ma prabhava samandita.
I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts.
So, mattaha sarvam pravartate. Chakravarti Pada is slightly different translation of this. Everything is maintained by me. But otherwise, it appears sort of repeating. You know? I am the source of everything, everything comes from me. He says, everything is maintained by me. Everything comes from me, everything is maintained by me. And to understand the flow of what comes next, it is useful to slightly reverse the second part. That iti matva, Prabhupada translates it as, that though the wise who know this, worship me wholeheartedly. So, the way Chakravarti Pal explains it later on in the later verses, that those who wholeheartedly worship me become wise and come to know this about me. That means this verse is becoming the end knowledge. That how will you understand that aham sarvasya pravamatta sarvamagarte? That is by doing bhajante maam bhava samanvita. And when you do devotional service to me, you will become Buddha. And when you become Buddha, you will know me. So bhava samanvita is elaborated in the next verse. And how one becomes Buddha is elaborated in the next two verses after that. So, ninth verse describes bhava samanvita. How to worship the Lord with bhava. So, now Prabhupada goes elaborately in this purport and establishes how Krishna is supreme by quoting from various sources. And we will not go into that. But that's a very valuable resource. And Prabhupada is taking this mainly from Krishna Sandarbha. But Jiva Goswami makes practically a... Sometimes, you know, when you want to fight with the enemy, you do a march past of your soldiers. Yeah, such a big army. You want to attack now? So like that, Jiva Goswami does a parade of verses glorifying Krishna's supreme position. You know? And it's who wants to challenge them. It's like that. So Prabhupada quotes some of those verses here. Bhava samanvitaha. That will be elaborated in the next verse. Machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam kathayantascha maam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha.
The thoughts of my dear devotee dwell in me. Their lives are to be devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss of always engaging one another and conversing about me.
So he says, machitta means their minds are greedy for me. Prabhupada translates also machitta very beautifully. Their thoughts dwell in me. Dwell in me means that actually I am their mental home. Very beautiful phrase. Their thoughts dwell in me. That means what? So if we dwell somewhere, if some places are home, we may go out of that for some time. But always when we go out of home, we want to come back home quickly. So like that, a devotee's thoughts dwell in Krishna. They may go here, they may go there, I have to do this, I have to do that. But as soon as everything is done, they come back to Krishna. So, to some extent, as we become more advanced, Krishna will become our mental home. For materialistic people, cricket, or sense gratification, or their bank account, or whatever. So there are so many other mental homes. And to some extent, the more our mental home changes, the more that is a sign of our spiritual advancement. What does mental home mean? That means when our mind has nothing to do, where does it go? Well, most of us know where it goes. At least I know. So we have not yet made Krishna our mental home. But we can try. It describes that when one comes to the asakti stage, just like a conditioned soul, he is sitting and trying to concentrate his mind on Krishna, and suddenly the mind goes away to Maya and he doesn't understand only how the Maya has gone away. So he described Bhakti Sam Sindhu that when the advanced devotee is at the asakti level, he's sitting and he's trying to work at the material level, but suddenly the mind goes off to Krishna. He doesn't understand when the mind went off to Krishna. So what? Oh, how that time we can say Bandhur Atma Atmanastasya. That time our mind has become afraid. Till then it is anyway. So he says, so Chakravartita said that three limbs of the nine are described in this verse. So Machitta is Smaran. Then Bodhayanta is Shravan. Kathayanta is Kirtan. And he says like that, all the other the devotees perform all the other limbs of bhakti also. And he describes Madgata Prana means, Prabhupada said, my, their lives are dedicated to me. He says, yes, that means, lives are dedicated to me, they cannot live without me. That they have nothing to do in their lives without me. And nine limbs. Three are described over here. Three are described. Kathayanta is Kirtan, Bodhayanta is Shravan, Machitta is Smaran. And then Tushyanti cha Ramanti cha means his delight in devotional service. But he gives one more meaning, that he says this is Raganuga Bhakti being described over here. So what is Raganuga Bhakti? Raganuga Bhakti means spontaneous love for Krishna. So he says, although the devotee is here in the material world, but he thinks, his mind and heart is associating with Krishna. So generally we don't study the later chapters of the NOD, but then it is described that this advanced devotees, they live at two levels. Now, once their Swarupa Siddha, they work, they also live at the level of their eternal Swarupa. And they are simultaneously performing their services here and services there. So that is Raganuga. They understand who is my model devotee, and they model themselves accordingly. So at a mental level, they are already associating with Krishna. So he said this is what, although they are not associating with Krishna clearly, directly, they are associating in their minds with Krishna. And that's why they are satisfied right now. Because what they are going to get in the future, they are experiencing at the mental level now. So Bhava Samanvita is described over here. Now how by this Bhava Samanvita Bhakti, one will become Buddha? Because generally people think that emotional people are not rational. They are not very intelligent. But Krishna is telling, by emotional bhakti, by bhakti which involves your emotions, you will become Buddha, you will become intelligent. So this is a different kind of intelligence, not an intelligence which comes from mere analysis. That is also required, but this comes by the grace of Krishna. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te.
Those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me.
So here the word buddhi yoga has come after which chapter? Second chapter, it came extensively. After Krishna did not use it much. I don't think he used it even once in third or fourth, fifth chapters. Now it's come again. But here Buddhi Yoga is directly Bhakti Yoga. Buddhi Yoga is the influence given by Krishna by which we can come back to him. So same word, but different meaning. And also, here the Buddhi Yoga is related with the word two verses ago, Buddha. So by the Buddhi Yoga, one will become Buddha. And we know this verse, we have discussed it very often. Priti Purvakam. The devotee is serving him with love. And that's why Krishna becomes pleased and wants to give him more and more. By which he can return to him. Now the next verse is basically an elaboration on the Dhamma Buddhi Yogantam. How Krishna gives Buddhi to him? Tesham evanukam partham aham agyana jantamaha nashayamyatma bhavastho jnana deepena bhaswata.
To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy the shining lamp, the shining lamp of knowledge, the darkness born of ignorance.
Aham agyana jantamaha nashayami. I'll destroy their knowledge. Chakravarti Padma says that Krishna has said, I will maintain my devotees. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. So the maintenance is not just physical. The devotee has to be maintained spiritually. So for that, whatever knowledge is required, Krishna says, I will give that knowledge. So that is described in this verse. So I provide what they lack. So he says, even if the devotee lacks intellectual capacity, even if the devotee lacks the ability to study scripture, I provide that and compensate for that. So here, this gives a summary of bhakti. The first verse I talk about sambandha jnana, aham sarvasya pramatta sarvam pravartate. Then the third and the fourth verses are talking about abhideya, and the second verse is talking about prayojan, being satisfied in bhakti. So now, after hearing this, Arjuna starts speaking. So this is the first time, yeah. Well, first verse is sambandha. 8-8. That's Krishna's position. And 10-11 is given Abhidhaya, the process of devotional service and how it works. Actually, it's like different vachas give slightly different things over here. But some say that basically 9, 10, 11 both are Abhidhaya, or they say 10, 11 are Abhidhaya. And prayojan is basically bhava samanvitaha. You attain bhava. Bhava bhakti is bhava samanvitaha is related with bhava. So in that sense. The idea is sambandha, abhidhaya, and prayojan, all three are there in this. Now Arjuna is going to speak for a long time. As I mentioned, Arjuna's questions are not long. But here first he is going to glorify Krishna. And after that he will make a request. This time it's not a question, it's a request. It's a difference. Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adidevam Ajam Vibhu Austvam Rishaya Sarve Devarshir Naradastatha Asito Devalo Vyasa Swayam Chaiva Bravishime.
Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Person of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyas confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are for eternity for me.
So, the word Dhamma can be a little confusing here. You are the supreme abode. That means you are that Brahmajyoti. That is the abode. So Chakravarti Pad immediately quotes Amarkosh. Amarkosh is standard Vedic dictionary and he says, Dham refers, one of the meanings of Dham is place, another meaning is form. So here Param Dham refers to, you are the supreme form. So Prabhupada just translated Dham as abode, but Chakravarti Pad is the additional detail. Dham is abode over here. So you are the supreme Brahman, you are the supreme abode. And then he says, Pavitram Paramam. That you are the... This form of yours is supremely purifying. This form of yours is not a product of Maya, as the Mayavadis think. In fact, it is supremely purifying. And then he goes on to describe Purusham Shashvatam. Very clear. Arjuna's understanding. See, Prabhupada gives a simple criteria for us to understand what is the actual message of the Gita. And that is to see what is the understanding of the original student of the Gita. Very simple. So, if we, how do we know Arjuna's understanding? Arjuna does not give an elaborate lecture of what I understood. But this is the most elaborate place where Arjuna, elaborately that Arjuna speaks what he understood in the whole Gita. And so, how do we know what a person has understood? That is by his speech and by his actions. And what does he say at the end of the Gita? Karishye vachanam tava. And we know what happened after the Bhagavad Gita. He fought the war as per Arjuna's Krishna's instructions. So, in that sense, if you look at the Bhagavad Gita in its original setting, its message is not capable of unlimited interpretation. We are given Arjuna's understanding, which is, if you read his whole verse, there is practically no sign of anything impersonalist over it. Param Dhamma, even if we say that, okay, that refers to impersonal Brahman, you are the supreme Brahman, you are that all-pervading Brahman, which is the rest of everyone. But then immediately there is Purusham. Very clear, and that Purusham is not a temporary Purusham, Shashvatam it is, Shashvatam and Divyam. So it's very clear. And then after that, he also reiterated that you have said this, and all the great sages have also said this about me. And then after that, Arjuna continues this. Another very important point, verse Prabhupada would often quote, Sarvam etadvitam manye janmam vadasi keshava nahite bhagavan vyakte vedurdevana danavaha.
O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality.
So sarvam etadvitam manye. So I accept everything that you have said. I accept completely what you have said. Sarvam can refer to both. And Chakravarti Pad, they say this especially refers to 10.2. 10.2 is Name Vidu Suraganaha. Actually, this is a very bold claim to make. It seems to be almost arrogant. Main kaun hu, koi bhi nahi janta hai. Isn't it? Who I am, nobody knows. If only you know how great I am. It seems to be a very arrogant claim. And say, even that person, even the great sages, they also don't know me. You seem to be very arrogant claim. He says, no, I accept that. Sarvam etadatam manye. And he says, Keshava. Keshava, what does it mean? What is the meaning of Keshava? Ka Ishava, one who. So he says, you bind and control even Keshava, even Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu. And how do you bind and control them? With the knots of ignorance. So he says, even they can't understand you. So Deva, he says, Name Vidu Suragana. Suragana, he says, they include Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu also. They also cannot understand you. It's a rasic understanding. Now, then he says further, he says, so here Krishna is Arjuna is expressing his first he expresses understanding, then he cannot summarize the whole Bhagavad Gita, then he gives his wholehearted acceptance of all that has been said, and then he gives a further understanding and makes a request. Swayam evatmanatmanam vettatvam purushottama bhuta bhavana bhutesha deva deva jagatpate.
The Supreme Person, Arjuna, all, Lord of all the, Lord of God, Lord of the universe.
So, Swayam Evatmanatmanam. So here it says that you are unborn and still you take birth. How can a devotee understand this? So the devotee understands this in the sense that he accepts it is true. But how it can be, even a devotee cannot understand it. It is only you who understand it. That's Swayam Evatmanatmanam. And then he gives a nice sequence of the Lord, epithets that are used to glorify Krishna. He says, you are Purushottama, you are the supreme person. Why are you the Purushottama? Bhuta Bhavana, you are the maintainer of everyone. But am I like a father who maintains all my children? No, because sometimes the children go out of the control of the father. But you are Bhutesha, you are eternally in control of them. And then he says, yes, but the father as the children grow up, then the father and the son cannot enjoy much. The relationship says, Deva Deva, you perform pastimes, you eternally delight, and even the demigods assist you in delighting in those pastimes. And then, what are these pastimes for? Sometimes the child grows up, he becomes then the father cannot protect him, because father has grown old. He says, no, Jagatpate, you are eternally, you are always the protector of the universe. So he's telling the position of Krishna through these five epithets, Purushottam, Bhuta Bhavana, Bhutesha, Deva Deva, and Jagatpate. And then he says, please, he makes a request now. So Krishna, you have told that, so the request, what is the background for this request now? Krishna, you said that nobody knows you. I accept that. But I make an additional statement that you know yourself. So therefore, you only told me about yourself. That is how he is making a request now. Vaktum arhasya sheshena divyayatma vibhutaya yabhir vibhutibhir lokan imam stvam vyapyatishthasi.
Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds.
So, divyaya atma vibhutaya. Please tell me. Asheshena. Asheshena means unlimitedly you can tell me. So Krishna says, but my opulences are unlimited. I cannot tell all of them to you. So he says, okay, at least tell me the opulences that are manifested in this world. Yabhir vibhuti vilokam. Imam swam vyapatishtasi. In this world, how are your opulence is manifested. Then he takes this next words, which Prabhupada used a nice purport to. Let's recite this, then we'll go to Prabhupada's purport. Katham vidyamaham yogim stvam sada parichintayan eshu eshu chaveshu chintyosi bhagavanmaya.
Oh Krishna, oh supreme mystic, how shall I constantly think of you and how shall I know you? In what various forms are you be? Remember,
so Prabhupada explains Bhaveshu means in material nature. So Krishna, Arjuna is asking Krishna, you are told about how you are the Supreme Lord, the source of everything, but most people cannot think about that. So while they are in the material world, how can they think about you? So please tell your about your vibhutis, how you pervade this material world. So after making this question, once more he repeats it. I am very eager to hear this. Vistarenatmano yogam vibhutim cha janardana bhuya kathayatum dehi shunvato
nasti mevritam. Oh, Janardana, again please describe explain the mystic power of your opulence, I have never
satiated
in hearing about you. For the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words.
So, he goes, Chakradhyayi has a nice meaning of Janardana here. Jana means people, Ardhan means agitation. So you create agitation in people like me. What is agitation? Agitation to hear more and more of your glories. And Krishna says, so Arjuna, but what is agitated? Arjuna says, my ear has become like a tongue, and the words that you are speaking are like nectar. So with the tongue of my ear, I want to relish the nectar of your word. Therefore, vistarain, speak elaborately, vistarain. So this Chakravarti says that Krishna, you told etam vibhutim yogam cha earlier, vibhuti. So please elaborate on your vibhuti that you mentioned in 10.7. Tell me about your glories. And Krishna is pleased by Arjuna's desire to hear. So Krishna congratulates him. And then he starts speaking. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Hantate Kathayashyami Divyayatma Vibhutaya Yabhita Kuru Sreshta Nastanto Vistarasyame.
The Supreme Personality of God had said, yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those which are prominent. O Arjuna, for my opulence is limitless.
Nastyanto. So Arjuna asks Vistarain. He says Nastyanto Vistarasyame. There is no, if you go to Vistar, there is no end only. Therefore I'll tell you Pradhanyataha. I'll tell you principle. And Hanta is the expression of joy. Krishna is delighted and Arjuna asks this question. And then he starts off. Aham Atma Gudakesha Sarva Bhutashaya Sthitaha Aham Adishya Madhyam Cha Bhutanamanta Evacha.
I am the super soul, O Arjuna, seated in the heart of all living entities. I am the beginning, the middle and the end of all beings.
Yeah. This is also one of the favorite verses of the Mayavadis. Aham Atma Gudakesha Sarva Bhutashaya Sthitaha. I am the Atma seated in the heart of all living beings. Well, if that Atma is the same, then Krishna has just said in this chapter only that I give knowledge from within the heart. So if he is only the person who is to receive knowledge, he is the person only to give knowledge. So who is giving knowledge to whom then? It's obvious that there are two different Atmas. So, Sarva Bhuta Ashaya Sthitaha. Chakravarti Pad gives two meanings of this. He says Sarva Bhuta Ashaya. Ashaya can mean the heart. Then that is the Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu. And Ashaya can mean the aggregate. That means when the world is yet to be manifested, at that time, in the aggregate of the universe, I am situated in the super soul in the form of Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, sorry, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So both meanings can be there. Then, Adityanamaham Vishnu, Pratisam Raviramshuman, Ayyad, Nakshatranamaham Shashi.
Of the Aditya, I am Vishnu. Of light, I am radiant sun. Of the Maruf, I am Marichi. And among the stars, I am Vishnu.
Now, interestingly, many times people think that this is referring to Lord Vishnu over here. Actually, that is not Vishnu. When the sun moves, the sun has Aditya is sun. So, when the sun moves in the zodiac, depending on the area where it is, the sun has a particular name. So, one of the names of the sun god is Vishnu. So, the names are given over here. Yeah. It's like different personalities take control of the sun. It's like, you know, the same person, different aspects. Just like the Rudra 11 type, Rudra has 11 names. So, basically, the same person, but different personalities take charge of that person at different times. It's like a post. Let's not go into that right now. The idea is that this is talked about in the 12th canto also elaborately. So there are different names are given here: Aryaman, Mitra, Varuna, Indra, Vyaswat, and all those. And among them, I am Vishnu. And very interestingly, this is the only reference to Vishnu in the whole Gita. There is no other reference to Vishnu. And Aham Sarvasya Prabho. Jiva Goswami uses that to say that I am the source of Vishnu also. Aham Sarvasya Prabho or Mattaha Parataram Na Anyat. So even Vishnu is not higher than me. So you take that to explain that actually Krishna is the source of everyone. So there is no explicit reference to Vishnu in the Bhagavad Gita apart from this. And then, yes. Vedanam samvedosmi, devanam asmi vasava, indriyanam manaschasmi, bhutanam asmi chetana.
Of the Vedas, I am the Samaved. Of the demigods, I am Indra, the king of heaven. Of the senses, I am the mind. And in the living beings, I am the living force, consciousness.
So among the Vedas, when the devatas come, it's very important to glorify them nicely. Samveda tells us how to glorify them. It's filled with very melodious sounds, like melodious songs, Samveda. Later on Krishna says, Brihat Sam Tha Sam Naam. Among the Samveda, I am that Brihat Sam, which is a particular very beautiful song within that. So among devatas, I am Indra. Now, we will not go into detail of all of these lists, but I'll talk two things as we go over this list. First is the general principle of what Krishna is saying when he's identifying himself like this. And second is the specific details of something that have to be clarified. See, this chapter is often mistaken to show that the Bhagavata's teaching is pantheistic. Pantheistic means
worship
everything, worship nature itself, everything as God. But you know, if you look at it logically, Krishna doesn't have to tell Vedanam Samvedosmi, or because earlier only I said everything has come from me. If everything has come from me, then why does he have to say this is I'm this, I'm this, I'm that? No, Krishna is everything only directly. He could have said like that. But Krishna gives a general principle at the end, Yadyad Vibhuti Mat Sattvam. That these are opulent manifestations. Opulent, beautiful and glorious manifestations. So what was Arjuna's question? Arjuna's question was, how can I remember you in the material world? While I'm in the material world and I'm in material consciousness, how can I think of you? How can I remember you? So Krishna is giving a general principle. Right? Now, if Krishna says, I am Samveda, does that mean that I'm not Rig Veda? I'm not Yajur Veda? They're also coming from Krishna. But the principle we have to understand. In this material world, there are certain things which are attractive. They may be attractive because of their power, because of their beauty, because of their sweetness, whatever. So, those attractive things attract our minds. So, Krishna is telling that whenever anything attracts your mind in this world, then you should remember that attractive potency of that thing is coming from me. It's a spark of my potency. So this is not a chapter which is talking about literal identification of Krishna with everything. But later on Krishna will say, Pandavanam aham Dhananjaya. Among the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. Oh, I didn't know Krishna. We two are one. No need for you to speak. That's the end of Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't say like that. So the principle is, this oneness or this identification of Krishna with the people or the things of this world is not literal. It is representative. The technical word in grammar is called the genitive case. I'm not going to what is genitive. You'll have to revise all your grammar lessons for that. But representative is sufficient to understand that. In this world, among the various things, certain things attract us. So when certain features attract us, we should know that attractive potency is coming from Krishna. And therefore, instead of getting attracted to the particular things, particular people, we should get attracted to that person who is the source of those attributes. So in Kali Yuga, Krishna would have said, among cricketers, I am Sachin Tendulkar. It's not wrong. It's not wrong because he has got some vibhuti. He has got some vibhuti by which he is able to perform some hit a ball in a special way with a stick. But that vibhuti is coming from Krishna. So the idea is, whatever we remember, like you see Prabhupada's extraordinary compassion, he told a drunkard that, you know, if you are attracted to wine, doesn't matter. Just try to think that the taste of the wine is Krishna. One day you will become a devotee by that. So Prabhupada is not encouraging people to drink wine and think that the taste of wine is Krishna. No. As it is, people who drink wine, they can think like that. So this is the basic principle. The principle is, here it is not literal, it is representative. Whatever attracts our mind, we should understand that attractive potency is coming from Krishna. And therefore, instead of letting our mind be attracted to those things alone, we can connect those things further to Krishna and become attracted to Krishna. This is how we can think about Krishna. So there are many speakers materially, there are many writers who are very brilliant. There are people who are materially brilliant. Sometimes we may use the books of Stephen Covey and other people. So we should understand that, if Stephen Covey contains some good wisdom, that is coming from his brilliance is coming from Krishna. And there's nothing wrong if we use it for Krishna's service. But the real danger comes, we start thinking him to be very clever, and then we forget the Krishna connection. His Krishna connection, we forget our Krishna connection also. We get influenced by him. Then it is a problem. But if we are seeing the Krishna connection properly, then there's no problem. So this is the first principle overall. And we will only discuss some details where Chakravarti Pad gives some additional information in some cases. Or there's some other information which we can know. Now, Indriyana Manaschasmi. Among all the senses, the most powerful, the most dangerous is the mind. Later on, Krishna in the 15th chapter will talk about how all the senses are centered around the mind. In 15.9 he says, Shrotram Chakshu Sparsham Cha Rasanam Grahanam Eva Cha Adhishtana Manaschayam Vishayan Upasevate. So they are all centered around the mind. So mind is the most powerful of all the senses. That's why he says Indriyana Manaschasmi. And now, what is the distinguishing power of the living entity as compared to that matter? That is his consciousness, his power of awareness. So therefore he says, Bhutana Asmi Chetana. Without Chetana, the living entity will become as bad as that matter only. Rudranam Shankarashasmi Viteshu Yaksha Rakshasam Vasunam Pavakashasmi Yeru Shikharinamaham.
Of all Rudras, I am Lord Shiva. Of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the Lord of Wealth, Vera. Of the Vasus, I am Fire. And of mountains, I am Meru.
So Rudra has, say, there are 11 Rudras. Among them, one of them's name is Shankara. So these 11 Rudras are who come from Brahma. So the Shiva Tattva is very complicated. I am not going into that. There is Rudra who is existing in this world, who is the son of Brahma. Beyond that, there is Sadashi who lives at the junction of the material and spiritual world. Sadashi is about Kailash, is 3/4 in the material world, 1/4 in the spiritual world. And beyond then, there is a form of Vishnu who is named Sadashiv. So he's a four-handed Vishnu Murti, but with the name Sadashiv. He's in the spiritual world directly. Now, yeah? Okay, what is the relationship between 7th and 10th chapter? 7th chapter is the essence. Prime talking about the essences and the causes. Here it is talking about the vibhutis. So now you cannot say that among the Pandavas, Arjuna is the essence. Yeah. Remembrance, it is basically to connect so that we can remember. Now all the Pandavas are real, living people. And you know, so now if you see, water has no existence without its taste. If you look at the creation described in Sankhya in 3rd canto, from taste, water comes. So in that sense, the essence and the cause. Here, all of them are, here basically what Krishna is doing, Krishna is taking a group and the outstanding representative of the group, he's identifying with himself. It's not like that over there. He's not saying, among liquids, I am water. If you say something like that, of course, you would have to say, among liquids, I am mango juice or something like that. Big juice. Okay. So, here is a group, and within a group, the representative. So, that is called as, so there is so much existence in this world, and in this existence, there is some existence that is conscious. So, that are the living entities. So, that which is special about his living entity is the power of consciousness. I am that. Like that he's talking about. So then, Vasunam Pavakaschasmi. This, actually, there are 8 Vasus, and among them, one of them is Pavak. So it becomes a little confusing if the translation is not very clear. So among those Vasus, I am the Vasu named Pavaka. Purodasam cha mukhyam maam vidhipartha brahaspatim senani namaham skandha sarasam asmi sagaraha.
Of priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief, Brihaspati. Of generals, I am Kartikeya. And of bodies of water, I am the ocean.
Yes. So here, the devatas depend on Kartikeya for fighting. So although they are powerful, Kartikeya is the strongest among them. He is their commander. And Brihaspati is of course their guru. And the ocean is the largest among all bodies of water. That's why generally it is said all the rivers go to the ocean. We don't hear the ocean is going to the river. Now there's another category. Earlier he said, among the priests, I am Brihaspati. But now among the rishis, he says, I am somebody else. Maharishinam bhrugurham giram asmyekam aksharam yajnanam japayajnyosmi stavaranam himalaya.
The great sages, I am Bhrugu. Of vibrations, I am transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am chanting of the holy names. And of the immovable of things, I am the Himalayas.
So, when Hiranyakashipu performs a lot of tapasya, at that time, Brahmaji comes and says, this kind of tapasya you have performed, even Bhrugu would not have performed it. So Bhrugu is considered to be a Rishu who can perform a lot of tapasya. And in fact, Bhrugu is one of the original Brahmanas. So you see, among them I am Bhrugu. And Ekaksharam is Omkar. That I am the, among all the words that can be uttered through the mouth, I am Omkar. Now, let's go forward. Ashwattha sarva vrukshanam devarishinam cha narada sarvanam chitraratha siddhanam kapilo munihi.
Of all trees, I am the vanity along the sages, among the demigods and others. Of the reservoirs and chitraratha, and among perfected beings, I am the sage Kapila.
Yeah. Let's not recite those verses. Just can we read the translation quickly?
Of horses know me to be Uchchaishrava, produced during the churning of the ocean for nectar. Of lordly elephants, I am Airavata, and among men, I am the monarch.
Yes, so again the best of the category.
Of weapons, I am the thunderbolt. Among cows, I am the Surabhi. Of causes for procreation, I am Kandarpa, the god of love. And of serpents, I am Vasuki.
So here, Indra's Vajra is considered to be the most powerful of. So Prabhupada explains in one place that among the primal demigods, Vishnu is supreme, and among the administrative demigods, Indra is supreme. So primal demigods means Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. They are not involved in the day-to-day administration. And the administrative, that's why when there is trouble, all the devatas go to Brahma. And they first inform him. Then Brahma informs, Brahma prays to Vishnu. So they are the primal devatas, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. And the administrative demigod, among them the strongest is, the head is Indra. So his weapon is considered to be most powerful. And it's Bhajanas Chasmi Kandarpa, it's a little confusing. Or what is that? Among?
God among causes for creation.
So actually Chakravarti Pad gives a more clear translation. What he says is, among all forms of lust, I am the lust that leads to procreation. So this is related to Dharma Ruddha Bhuteshu Kamasmi Bharatarshava. Yes, a person can become lusty in many ways. Every ordinary lust is not Krishna. But the lust which is used for procreation, that is Krishna. Prajanas Chasu Kandarpa creates desire. Kandarpa is Kamadev. He creates lust within our heart. But when Kandarpa's, the lust created by Kandarpa lead to Prajana, it leads to procreation, then I am that. Now that every lust is Krishna. And then now interesting, Krishna differentiates between Sarpa and Naga. He said, Sarpanam Asmi Vasuki. Next verse he will tell, Anantaschasmi Naganam Varino Yadasamaham Pitrunam Aryamachasmi Yama Sanyamatamaham.
Of the many rooted Naganas, I am Ananta, and among the equities, I am the demigod Bodhuni. Of the departed ancestors, I am Aryanam, and among the dispensers of the Lord, I am Lion, Yam, the Lord of the
Earth. So what is the difference between Naga and Sarpa? Naga is many-hooded, yes, multi-hooded, that is Naga. One-hooded is Vasuki, that among is snake. Yama Sanyamatamaham. So, if people don't listen to any of the disciplined action of this world, then there's somebody who will discipline them later. That is Yamaraj. Cobra comes under serpent, yes, generally speaking. Okay, let's move on. Prahladaschasmi daityanam kala kalayatanam dukyanam chaluge
dhirvam. Among the daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlad. Among subduers, I am time. Among beasts, I am the lion, and among birds I am Garuda.
Among birds I am Garuda. So now why is Krishna considering himself to a lion? Because lion is considered to be the king of the animals. Mruganam Mrugendro. Go ahead.
Of the besides I am the wind, of the feathers of the sun I am Ram, of the chest I am the star, and of the rivers I am the Ganges.
Okay. So this one thing about the previous verse, where he says, Kalha Kalayatam Aham. So among all the things that control and destroy, time is the greatest. You know, people who cannot be controlled by anyone else, they'll be controlled by time eventually. So Krishna will talk about time several times. In this, twice he talks in this chapter, and once he will famously talk in the next chapter. Kalosmi Lokakshetra Pravruddho. So here he's talking different time as controller. Another time he'll refer to something else. You see that. Now here, just a minute. Here, among holders of weapon, Rama Shastrabhata Maham. So both Baldev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanathaswami Thakur say this refers not to Sri Ramachandra. It refers to Parshuram. Because generally Lord Ramachandra is a direct avatar. Whereas Parshuram is generally the Shaktiyavish avatar. And this chapter is not talking about, it's talking about Vibhutis. So it will be referring to Parshuram. Yeah, Kapila also sometimes direct incarnation, sometimes a Vibhuti. So when it is referred to over here as a Vibhuti, Lagu Bhagavatamrita talks about that.
Generally, Yamuna is considered to be more purifying.
Yes, Yamuna is considered the most purifying. That is from the Vaishnava point of view. The Bhagavatam is not talking about, the Bhagavad Gita is talking overview of Vedic literature. Generally, Ganga is considered the most sacred. Yamuna is for Vaishnavas, especially. No, the thing is that, see here what happens is that, again the translation problem comes up. Because you know, what is Jashana? What is Makara and what is Jashana? Is Makara really a shark? You really don't know. You know, that's a translation which you always heard. But it's not necessary that Makara has to be a shark only. It's approximate translation it is. Many of the translations that are there from Sanskrit, you know, like that Ashwatha, Chakravartipa translates as people. And he is translating as banyan. And then I was reading one, I was just doing some research before this class. So one devotee's article is there, you know. There are, if you go to Monia Williams Dictionary, Ashwatha has 12 meanings. And it's completely undecided what Ashwatha is. So you know, you don't get into technical. So especially when it comes to technical details, no? Often the Sanskrit words, to translate them into English is quite difficult. And Prabhupada gives approximate translations many times. Prabhupada did not focus too much on, now, Prabhupada could have kept some words as it is. So he did that with dharma. Now, often he would not translate dharma as religion because religion was problematic. But sometimes he would translate them into English even if he knew the English words were inappropriate. Because it's better to have familiar handles rather than have unfamiliar handles. First of all, the concept is unfamiliar, the word was unfamiliar. Because more difficult for people to understand. Yeah. For us it's a little easy. But for others it is not. Sarganamadirantascha Madhyam Chaivaham Arjuna Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam Vada Pravadatamaham.
Upon creations I am the beginning and the end, and also the middle before Arjuna. Upon sciences I am the spiritual science of the self, and among logicians I am the supreme.
Yes. So here Krishna is going on and describing various things over here. So Vadaha means like we have Maya Vad, Veda Vad Rataha Partha. So those who try to establish their position, when debate is going on, somebody can just go on, argue. But you take systematically, okay, this is your point, this is the repetition, this is your point, this is the repetition. So when something is presented systematically, then it becomes a Vad. In Sanskrit, in English Vad, in Marathi or Hindi, Vad just means argument. But Vad is a technical word. Maya Vad means the argument about the philosophy, that particular philosophy, and it is presented systematically. Then it becomes Maya Vad. So should we complete this or should we stop and we'll continue on in the afternoon?
Complete
this? Okay. Shouldn't take much time. Yeah, let's go ahead. Okay, chalega. Let's go ahead. Please read.
Of letters, I am the letter A, and among compound words, I am dual compound.
I am also in this inexhaustible time, and of creator I am Brahma.
So now here, time will come twice. One is as a controller, the other is as a destroyer. Time is there. In this world, two things. It controls. Hey, time khatam ho gaya, we have to go now. And then it destroys. It ends our life also. So in the spiritual world, there is time without these two features of time. Time does not control, time does not destroy. So that's why when we talk about time, there is time in the spiritual world. But these are the two defining attributes of time. Kala kalayatamam and aham evakshaya kalo. That I am, that time is the destroyer, time is, among controllers I am time, among destroyers I am time, Krishna is saying. So these are two defining attributes of time, and these two are absent in the spiritual world. So, spiritual world is often like an eternal present. That's what is used in the Bhakti, in Brahma Samhita. Yeah?
Akshaya means here, one is
controlling,
two
is controlling. No, what is, it's a very poetic translation. Aham evakshaya kalaha. Akshay means destroy. Akshay means which they destroyed. So I am indestructible time. That means time destroys everyone, but time itself never gets destroyed. The destroyers of this world will get destroyed themselves. But time will destroy everything and will never get destroyed. So it is the greatest of all destroyers. That's how it's being talked about.
I am all your in death, and I am the generating principle of all that is at me. Among whom I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience.
So, it's interesting, Krishna correlates mrityu with stri. You know, it's a it could just be a coincidence, but whatever it is, among times, so mrityu sarva harashchaham. So, then after that, now it's interesting, these qualities are feminine. So, that does not mean that these qualities are monopoly of females. Males can have these qualities, but primarily the female body, to some extent, somewhat naturally develops these qualities. And to the extent a woman has these qualities, she is considered to be beautiful as a female. In modern times, women want to develop more manly qualities. You know, so then they lose their natural beauty. And earlier this question was asked, why are women called as papa yoni? Because the female body is not so suited for self-realization. And that's why it's considered as papa yoni. So two reasons. One reason is that it is not suited for self-realization, and it is secondly suited to deviate those who are on the path of self-realization. So of course, that blame cannot go to women. The blame has to go on those who have enjoy mentality. But the fact is that the female body is considered to be a result of sinful activity. What is the sinful activity? It is attachment to a female. In the previous life, one was the soul was attached to a female, becomes a female in the next life. So, we will not go into all these qualities. Go ahead, next.
Of the hymns in the Sama Veda, I am Vrihat Sama, and of poetry, I am Gayatri. Of months, I am Vatushita, number 7, and of seasons, I am Lord Vaishnava.
Yes. So, spring is when it gives very nice flowers. That's why he's saying, I am spring. Go ahead. And Margashirsha, according to the traditional Vedic calendar, that is the first month. That's like among letters, I am the first letter. So like that, among months, I am the first month. Like that.
I am also the gambling of cheats, and of the splendid, I am the splendor. I am victory, I am adventure, and I am the strength of the strong.
So basically, why gambling among the cheaters? There are many different kind of cheaters. But when a person is gambling, you know, everybody thinks that I will cheat everyone else. Isn't it? Normally, you just think that I will cheat that person. Everybody is trying to cheat everyone else. So that's why gambling is considered a super form of cheating. And he says, I am the yutam chalayatam asmi. And then, jayosmi vyavasayosmi. So, Prabhupada translates, I am victory and I am adventure. Vyavasaya translates as adventure, endeavor. So our Indradhan Maharaj, when he wrote that book, Drums Along the Amazon, he quoted this over there. Krishna says, I am adventure. So, you can experience Krishna as adventure if we try to preach in adventurous ways. Sattvam Sattvatamaham, go ahead.
Of the descendants of Krishna, I am Vasudev, and of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. Of the sages, I am Vyas, and among great thinkers, I am Kushana.
So, it is described that here when Vishnu is, I am saying, he says, I am Vasudev. So here Vasudev refers to not Krishna but Balaram. Because Krishna is not referring to himself over here. So Balaram of course is the avatar, but Balaram is the manifestation who looks after this world, from whom all manifestations come. So talking about the material world, he is referring to Balaram as Vasudev. And it is described that, the Acharya described that when Krishna is going to speak, this was Pandavana and Dhananjaya. So as soon as Krishna uses the Pandavana, so Arjuna thinks Krishna will surely speak Yudhishthira. Because you know, he is the most virtuous. And he said, Dhananjaya is very surprised. Why he speaks Dhananjaya? So there are several reasons. One reason is that he is the most dear. And he is most dear because he is the most devotionally oriented. And that way also, he is most intensely devotional. And he is also the most versatilely powerful. You know, Bhima was powerful in his own way. But Arjuna was powerful in various skills. And he was going to be a decisive factor in the battle for Krishna to reestablish Dharma. Go ahead. Well, there are different categories if you don't want to go into them. Muni naam apyaham vyasa. So the Bhrugu, that's a Muni and it's a Rishi. Now, it's a technical difference. But the idea is both of them are famous. And whoever we think of, we can think of them in connection with Krishna.
Among all beings of
Ushana is Shukracharya. So he's talking about their Brihaspati, and then he's talking here about Shukracharya. Both sides he's talking. Yeah.
Among all means of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. And of those who seek victory, I am morality. Of secret things, I am silence. And of the wise, I am wisdom.
So it's interesting. He says that Lato ke bhut, so ultimately, this is I had to punish. Among all those who punish, I am the punishment. And so there are many ways to attain victory, but by moral victory, that is considered to be glorious. And of course, in secrets, I am silenced. Actually, if you want to keep a secret, the safest way is to keep it as a silence, not speak to anyone. Once you start speaking, what happens is everybody tells everyone and tells them to keep a secret. So that's how it works. Please don't tell anyone, I just tell you some secret. Yeah.
Furthermore,
now from here onwards, Krishna starts giving general principles. It's completed in 38. Now he starts giving general principles.
Furthermore, O Arjuna, I am the generating seed of all existences. There is no being, moving or non-moving, that can exist without me.
Yes. So, Sarvabhutanam Bijam, I am the generating seed. And it's a very strong verse. Natadasti Vinayatsyan Maya Bhutam Characharam. Nothing can exist without me. So here Krishna is making clear to Arjuna, these are vibhutis. But it's not only vibhutis are sustained by me. Everything is sustained by me. But the idea is, you wanted to remember me, and naturally you'll remember the vibhutis. So you connect the vibhutis with me. So in that sense, Krishna's current relationship is the whole world, is the sustainer of the whole world. Go ahead.
O mighty conqueror of enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestation. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulence.
Yes. This seems to be like height of arrogance, you know. You give a long list of glories. Ye toh abhi shuruaat ho rahi hai. So, actually, Dasya has described that Chakravarti Pada, his Bhagavatam commentary describes that why does Krishna glorify himself so much? If for only one purpose. He says that after glorifying himself, when he will glorify bhakti as the means to conquer him, people will understand the glory of bhakti. So that's the only reason why he's glorifying him, he's speaking his own glories. Because see, I am so great, first understand my greatness, and then how great must be the bhakti which conquers me. And that bhakti you have the opportunity to practice. That's why Krishna is glorifying himself. Yadyad vibhuti matsatvam shri madurjitam evava tatta deva vagachatvam mamatejomsha sambhava.
Know that all of them are beautiful and glorious creations spring from the spark of my strength.
Yes. So, mamatejo amsha, just a spark. And now, this amsha in this world, in this verse, and amsha in the next verse become the seed for Arjuna's question which starts the 11th chapter. अथवा बहुनैतेन किं ज्ञातेन तव अर्जुन विष्ठव्याहमिदं कृत्स्नम् एकांशेन स्थितो जगत्। Yeah, single fragment, I support everything. So Arjuna will ask, how do you support? Please tell me, how do you support by one amsha? Can I see how you are supporting it? And that's how the next chapter will start. So, in this chapter basically, let's go over the overview once again. What happened was, Vishnu said, nobody can know me, because I am the source of everyone. Then he said, yes, if you want to know me, it is through bhakti by my grace. And Arjuna says, Krishna, only you know, even the bhakta doesn't know you, only know you, you know yourself. So please tell me more about yourself, especially with respect to your manifestations, your vibhutis in the material world. And then Krishna elaborately described the vibhutis and he gives some principles that actually everything comes from me, but that which attracts your attention, know that its attractive potency is coming from me. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinda.
Hare Krishna, we'll have